Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, December 23rd. I'm Belle Lin for The Wall Street Journal. It seems tech founders are getting younger and younger. Some of them, in fact, are still in their teens. We dig into how some teenage entrepreneurs are well on their way to making it big. Then, new technologies are emerging that seek to drastically reduce fatalities and accidents involving drunken drivers. Yet, there are some key hurdles holding them back. But first, you might be familiar with tech founders in their 20s. But what about in their teens? It turns out there are plenty of young entrepreneurs out there these days who are still in high school or even younger. WSJ reporter Katie Bindley joins us now to tell us about some of the youngest new founders who are already pitching venture capitalists and gaining customers. Katie, you write about these young and hungry tech founders who increasingly happen to be teenagers. Tell us how they're building their companies.
So each of them has, you know, a different area of interest. AI is certainly a theme they all have in common. So I spoke with one 15-year-old who has built a platform that basically produces financial reports about small and mid-cap companies. So he's using AI models to generate these reports, and then people might use it to just learn more about a company. And then another one, he got his start selling hard-to-find candy in Singapore to his classmates. And so that got him experience in learning about distribution chains and whatnot. And he ended up actually applying to Y Combinator and was accepted as a 16-year-old. And his current startup is basically like a produce distribution company. And they are using AI to basically forecast inventory for grocers. And then the company basically gets the produce directly from farmers. They have a warehouse, and then they're delivering it to the grocers.
I can't imagine that it's all smooth sailing, though. Just like founders who are much older than them or just a little bit older than them face hurdles. What are some of the issues or challenges that these teenage founders face?
Well, one of them is still in high school. Another one is in eighth grade. So they're juggling schoolwork while trying to build these companies. And then they're certainly learning a lot. I spoke with a 14-year-old from Sydney, Australia, who had this idea for a gamified education app. Then he realized that it probably wouldn't scale. And he'd mentioned the app had a good why. He thought it was like a worthwhile endeavor from that perspective, but he didn't think it was actually going to be able to grow into something. And so now he's pivoted to a different idea now.
Those sound like challenges that all founders face.
Yes.
So they're just encountering them earlier on. What are some examples of the successes that these teenage founders are having?
So Nick, who has the financial research platform, he has tens of thousands of monthly users. And then some of the companies that have had reports generated about them have ended up putting out press releases touting the strength of the analysis. So he's gotten some attention for that. And then one of them was already accepted into Y Combinator, which is a pretty big achievement and something a lot of founders would love to be a part of. And he was just 16 when he was accepted. And then Albie, the young man from Sydney, he actually created a video. It was like a video application for Y Combinator. And he posted it to X, and it had millions of views. So he got a lot of attention on social media for his application.
And I also wonder, you know, when you spoke with investors who think about when and how to invest in young people, that some of them expressed hesitancy in investing in teenage founders. What makes them stop short a little bit?
Yeah, this was actually one of the most interesting things, was chatting with the VCs about some of the things that sort of need to be kept in mind. One guy I spoke with talked about how high school is not going to be a great place to find co-founders or employees and whatnot, and that traditionally college, even if young founders have dropped out of college, they've still been able to like build a network traditionally of people who are really smart, as smart as them, maybe smarter, who go on to work for them. And that's a lot of times where they've built their earliest teams. And then someone else just mentioned, you know, the whole really emotional component and maturity component. And he had met with three young founders and one of them was 17. And he started to think about, okay, if we're going to invest in this firm, I probably need to talk to the 17-year-old's parents and have a conversation about, is he emotionally prepared for some of the struggles that are going to be likely to come into his life as a result of pursuing this at such a young age?
That was WSJ reporter Katie Bindley. What do you think about teens and startups? And how young is too young to start a tech company? If you're a listener on Spotify, be sure to let us know in this episode's poll or leave us a comment. Coming up, there is tech out there that could help save lives by reducing drunken driving. We dig into how it works and why it's not yet widespread. That's after the break.
Do you know what you want for Christmas?
A cute toy.
No, I just want my family back.
That's what I want for Christmas.
We'll see what Santa can do, okay?
It's Christmas, so be of good cheer.
Merry Christmas.
'Tis the season to watch telly on Channel 4. Stream now.
There's no shortage of innovative technologies in the world that could help reduce drunken driving. Car makers and other public-private entities have been working on them for years. But you're not likely to see them in new vehicles quite yet. WSJ reporter Ryan Felton joins our Katie Dayton to discuss what some of these technologies are and why they have yet to reach our cars.
Can you describe some of the newer in-car systems and technologies that are being tested at the moment?
The two biggest ones are something that's currently being used is a driver monitoring system that nowadays is more commonly associated with automated driving technology that's equipped on some cars, you know, particularly on highways to control speed and steering. Some companies will put like cameras in and other things to monitor your driving behavior. Oftentimes, until now, it's been used for, you know, ensuring you're looking ahead at the road. But other companies are starting to think about how they could adapt that technology to detect other forms of impairment, be it alcohol, a medical episode, that sort of thing. So that's one aspect, and quite frankly, might be like a lower hanging fruit to pick off because it doesn't involve actually measuring blood alcohol content. It's using current technology to look at how you're driving at any given moment. The one that's more advanced is a breath-based system where it's basically as soon as you get in the car, there's sensors and other things that are detecting the air inside once you sit down and attempting to calculate blood alcohol content to see if it's above illegal levels. And that, again, has just been the trickier challenge.
And with both of those systems, do they literally shut down the car if they detect a driver might be drunk? Or is there any other kind of mechanism that might prevent them from driving?
Yeah, the part about the actual measuring of someone's blood alcohol content, since that tech isn't in place yet, no one really has a thought yet as to what the outcome should be. So there's proposed regulations to require this technology. I think the common held belief is it should be up to that regulation to dictate what the outcome should be. There's the fear that the car won't start, and that's been a prevailing theme in a lot of the pushback to this idea. But one of the main organizations involved in developing this tech, they said their test vehicles will turn on and then look to see if you're drunk or not. So that way, at least you could stay in the car. And if it's warm, put your AC on, or if it's cold, put your heat on. But you wouldn't be able to drive until your levels were at something deemed safe and within the bounds of the law.
And up until now, I mean, this technology has sort of been discussed for a while. Why haven't we been seeing it employed in cars everywhere?
That's a question I ask a ton of people, just because there's technologies that get put into cars that people aren't asking for. One example is what's called the on-off button, where if you're driving, your car shuts off effectively at a red light. It's an emissions-related thing. You would stop at a red light, and it would click back on once you hit the gas pedal. A lot of people hate that, and that's not a mandated technology. So there are examples of companies putting stuff in that people didn't necessarily ask for. In this case, the prevailing concern that I kept hearing was just the idea of a false positive is so concerning. One person who had worked on this tech said, you can't even have like a 1% false positive rate, because think about how many times someone turns on their car every single day. It could be 3-4 times. Against every car in the US, that's hundreds of millions turning on and off several times a day, 1% ends up being a ton of false positives.
And from all you've learned about this so far, and especially all of the criticism, how likely do you think it is that we'll see this technology widely adopted in the near future?
It's a known problem. There's over 10,000 people who die in alcohol-related crashes every year. And there's no one who disagrees that something needs to be done. It's just a question of how this technology is going to be dialed in to not produce so many negative consequences that people just end up asking for it to be disabled, or I don't know, sorts of scenarios where people are just like totally turned off by it. And I bring that up because in the past, seatbelts and airbags were not widely accepted. Airbags in particular drew a lot of controversy when they were first mandated because they were so forceful that they caused very serious injuries and deaths. And seatbelts, a lot of people just weren't using seatbelts for a long period of time. So there is this sort of like ingrained fear in the industry of consumers overall just like rejecting these sorts of safety devices. It's probably going to happen in some fashion, but it's likelier that it's going to be some sort of cautious approach that gives people some outs in some way, but still trying to be effective in clamping down on, you know, what's obviously a big problem.
That was WSJ reporter Ryan Felton speaking with Katie Dayton. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. If you're a listener on Spotify, be sure to take this episode's poll or leave us a comment. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Katie Ferguson and deputy editor Chris Sinsley. Logging off, I'm Belle Lin for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back later this morning with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.